activities that we did on this trip that we took to Jordan and Israel was to tour a Palestinian refugee camp in Bethlehem. And when we did that, someone had taught all the children to say hello and to say bye-bye. Because originally what all the children knew to do was anytime they saw a white person was to say shalom, because they assumed all white people were Israelis. But when their teachers taught them that they could say hello and goodbye to people who were coming into the camp, there was a chorus, literally a chorus, of little children shouting, hello, 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 everywhere we went. And as we passed, a chorus of bye-bye, 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 bye-bye. And every time we passed a teenage boy, every time we passed a teenage boy, and many adults, we didn't hear hello or goodbye. All we heard was Arabic spoken in alarming tones and really mean looks, because those folks don't like us. And they don't like us for a lot of reasons. But somewhere between 8 years old, when the little kids say hello, hello, hello to anyone that walks by, and 16 when they pick up guns, something changes. And it changes not just in the hearts of those Palestinian children, but in our children and in our hearts. And so I wanted to call to mind today, at the beginning of this conversation about reaching out, I wanted to call to mind these words by Sarah Moores Campbell, who reminds us of the spirit of a child that is not dead in any of us. The spirit of a child who will never stop saying hello and goodbye as long as they dare to keep that hope alive. She writes, give us the spirit of the child. Give us the child who lives within, the child who trusts, the child who imagines, the child who sings, the child who receives without reservation, the child who gives without judgment. Give us a child's eyes that we may receive the beauty and freshness of each day like a sunrise. The beauty and the majesty of each person like a new discovery, a gift waiting to be unwrapped. Give us a child's ears that we may be filled with wonder and delight. Give us a child's faith that we may be cured of our hard-fought cynicism. Give us the spirit of a child who is not afraid to need, who is not afraid to love. May it be so. Like Lord Krishna, Radha had skin that was milky white and smooth. See, when Krishna was a child, he loved Radha. He loved to play with her. He loved to romp in the woods with her. And he soon figured out, as they started to get older, that Radha was a little bit different than him. He asked his mother why it was that Radha was so different, why her skin was so light while his skin was so dark, and his mother responded by smearing paint on both their faces so that those two friends could see past their differences again and play as if they had the whole world in common. So when Krishna and Radha did that, smeared paint on their faces and danced together, the Hindu tradition remembered it. And every year, on the first full moon of March, Hindus all across the world celebrate that moment, that love between two different people. It's called the Festival of Holi, spelled H-O-L-Y, Holi. It's the Hindu Festival of Colors. And on that day, Hindus all across the world shut down all of their barriers and all their fears of one another and everything left over from the shadow of the caste system and cut loose. All social mores are abandoned. All class distinctions are forgotten. And folks that are classy and even pious every other day of the year fill water guns and open palms with paints and colors and squirt them all over each other. They paint their faces and their hands and their arms and their legs. They paint each other until nobody's color is discernible beneath the riotous array. Vagabonds dance in the streets with statesmen. Women who demurely cover themselves every other day of the year wear the same splotched wet t-shirts that their husbands do, and nobody cares. Worshippers of Vishnu cavort with worshippers of Shiva, and the tables of opposition, of class, of difference, of fear, they're overturned majestically for a day. Eventually, once all of this painting and all of this dancing happens for a few hours, all the colors blend and fade until everybody is sort of a dull, washed-out gray. And they dance, and they laugh, and they drink until the festival is over, and morning comes, and all those same old distinctions reassert themselves again. In a society where that old ghost of the caste system still holds on just enough to separate the haves from the have-nots, the powerful from the weak, there's that one time when none of it matters, where for one day people trade in the common world of opposition and categorization and buy into a world of interdependence and connection. For one day, at least for Hindus, all this stuff we're always talking about here at Brew actually works. The festival of Holi took place last week. I watched a report of it on TV while laying in my comfortable hotel room in Israel. We were staying that night on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. It's a peaceful, beautiful oasis where modern Israelis come for vacation, and out one window stretched that beautiful, calm, inland sea, the Sea of Galilee, while out the other window stretched a view of the Golan Heights. You may recognize that name from a few decades worth of news reports. The Golan Heights is a strip of mountainous terrain situated squarely between the Arab and Israeli worlds, and it has been fought over since the 1930s. Just a few decades ago, the hills above that quiet bungalow where I lay watching TV were filled with Arab snipers picking off Israeli settlers in exactly the same place where I lay there fluffing my pillow. That border is now secure, but the battle, we know, rages on. Further outside my window, just a few miles away, Arab-Palestinian farmers suffer under an economic blockade that is set up by the now powerful state of Israel and leaves them virtually unable to make a living. And just a little bit further afield, an hour and a half drive away, lays the center of the modern Palestinian-Israeli conflict. It's a conflict that pits child against child, a conflict that has no immediately foreseeable end. So I fluffed my pillow. I thought about the festival of Holi. I remembered the teenagers whom that very day we had seen toting guns half the size of them. And I wished I could pull that rainbow-splashed reality out of the TV and spread it out over the landscape outside my door, bring it back to you here in Manassas, and spread it out before you. I wished I could take that world of connection and superimpose it on this world of division that surrounds us so entirely. If Radha and Krishna could see their similarities, could not we do the same today? If that long aisle of separation can drop once a year for Hindus, can it not drop for a moment for all of us? Could not the thick scales of judgment fall from our eyes? Just long enough for teenagers to put down their guns, just long enough for people to see not just another person to fight against, but another person to fight for in each other. Could it happen? Could any of us, especially political leaders and especially religious folks, see past our differences enough to reach beyond the aisle of our separation and actually work with the people we think oppose us so completely? or as unified action across social, political, and religious boundaries? Is unified action just more hopeful pablum dished out by optimistic liberal preachers like myself? As I lay there, I thought about the snipers that once perched in the hills above my head. I wondered, and I remembered the difficult thing that I always remember, that conundrum called human nature. For after all, aren't we just tribal animals? We set up cultures and castes and creeds for the specific purpose of surrounding ourselves with people like ourselves. Our every act of culture and of faith is a method of defining ourselves, of figuring out the message of our people and finding a way to speak it over and above the message of all the other people. We fill our lives with categories that make us comfortable, that make us part of something, and we like our differences. We need our differences. They let us know who we are. They let us know who our people are. They let us know that we're not alone. Being a part of something, a culture, a faith tradition, a political party, is a way to fight off the meaninglessness that surrounds us. It's a part of being something that matters. This tribalism is a thing that keeps us safe very often, but it's also a thing that keeps us afraid. It makes us wary of those we don't understand. It prompts us to cross the street whenever a stranger passes by too closely. We are tribal creatures, we human beings. We enjoy being in categories and putting other people in categories. It's a part of our nature. When we look at the polarization in our nation today, the lines between people drawn more firmly than they have been since the civil rights era, when we look at the polarization in our nation today, where liberals dismiss conservatives and conservatives dismiss liberals, and Christians condemn Muslims and Muslims condemn Christians, and Unitarian Universalists just try to stay out of the line of fire, when you look at our polarized world today, you see the tribalism of human nature at work. The aisles that separate us are wide and long. And many of the disagreements that go into shaping those aisles of separation are profound and real. In the Middle East, nobody can deny the fact that Arab snipers killed innocent Israelis. Nobody can deny that Israeli blockades are starving out Arabs in their homeland. Nobody can deny that children on both sides tote weapons. All of those things are true. The barriers are real. The aisles of separation are wide and long. And there are any number of reasons that Israelis and Palestinians kill each other. For that matter, there are any number of reasons why liberals and conservatives in this country distrust one another so much that they can barely accomplish anything together. There are all sorts of reasons why liberal religious folks like ourselves will do just about anything to stay out of contact with religious conservatives. We're tribal creatures. It's just like us to separate ourselves. But we are also more than that. Human nature includes not only a tribal instinct, but a conscience. And the conscience lets us choose what aspects of our nature we'll emphasize and what aspects we will try to overcome. It is human nature to divide ourselves into categories, to protect ourselves from people who seem different than us, to look at the wide aisles of our separation. But it is also human nature to challenge ourselves to do better than that. In addition to being tribal creatures, we are choosing creatures, and I believe we can choose to find ways to reach across the barriers that divide us. And if we listen to the pull of our own spirits, we can't avoid interconnection even if we try. When Bert asked me to preach this sermon, he handed me an article about how our new U.S. Congress and its tentative and halting steps towards actual bipartisan efforts was working. And in that article, there was a picture of these people with hands literally reaching across the aisle of separation in the House. People physically reaching out to one another. And Bert asked me to help us see our potential for doing the same here in our community, for reaching across the barriers of separation that hem us in, for finding our potential to make allies in unlikely places. We have, here at the Bull Run Unitarian Universalists, made for ourselves a magnificent tribe. We have found something supremely sacred in one another. We have found a spiritual home and a chosen family, a place to be ourselves and be comforted, where we can speak our minds and nourish our hearts. Our tribe is a good tribe. But we Unitarian Universalists, perhaps more than anyone else, are choosing creatures. And we can choose how tightly we cleave to this tribe of ours, and we can choose how freely we reach across the aisles of separation into the lives of others in our surrounding community. We can choose to find allies in unlikely places, or we can choose to pretty much just hang out with each other. There are all sorts of good reasons to stay within the tribe. But there is that eternal and magnificent problem of conscience that calls us out of our isolation. Along with several other Brew folks, including O.G. Harper, I've been working for the last year and a half with this group called the Industrial Areas Foundation. It's founded on the organizing principles of Saul Alinsky. And the whole point is to get people who really disagree, people of very different faiths, and yet people of one unified hope, together in one room, and let them talk about how they can join as one to make a difference. Along with so many other religious leaders, I've been exploring what a united interfaith organization might look like here in Northern Virginia. And to that end, clergy from all different denominations have been getting together once in a month. We sit down, we talk, and we try very hard to learn to trust each other. One of my colleagues in that group is Pastor Keith Savage. He's minister of the First Baptist Church here in Manassas. And I can tell you that when he told his congregation he would be working with us, it took some courage for them to stay at the table. But they are at the table. And Temple Ner Shalom in Woodbridge is at the table, and so is the Muslim Community Center here in Prince William County, and so are liberal Catholics and conservative evangelicals and mainstream Protestants. We're all sitting there trying to learn to trust one another so that once we do, we can stop focusing on all the things we disagree on and do something important in our community. Eventually, we will be talking about issues that touch us all. Affordable housing, support for young mothers, health services for low-income families, homelessness prevention, gang violence. But for now, we're starting with reaching beyond the aisle to one another's outstretched hands. For now, we're starting by trusting one another to look for our connections and not our oppositions. And now every time I leave a meeting of that clergy group, the pastor of the First Baptist Church gives me a hug and says, God bless you. And now, even the minister who only a year ago preached so vehemently against my stand on support of marriage equality, now even him, that pastor who denounced me from the pulpit, shakes my hand and asks me how I'm holding up in married life. Now we are getting somewhere. And now we need your help. Over the next several months, OG and I will be talking about this interfaith organizing effort, and we need you to join in. It can't be just pastors that reach out to each other. It must be all of us. As a congregation, we've made a tentative commitment to about a year of exploration in this effort, and we've teamed up with existing groups like Unity in the Community to talk about what interfaith efforts look like here in Manassas. But it does not get anywhere at all without your help. It does not get anywhere at all unless Pastor Savage's congregants at the First Baptist Church and us somehow meet each other across the aisle and do something together. It only matters if we all reach to one another, if all of us, Catholic, Muslim, Jewish, Unitarian, Universalist, and Southern Baptist, ask, what friends can we do together? We don't begin with issues. We begin with a table to sit at, a few good people, and a willingness to work together. If you are ready to reach beyond the aisle, talk to me and talk to OG, and let us begin. Together we can turn the categories on their heads. Together we can choose what part of human nature we want to celebrate. As I clicked off the television screen there in my hotel room in Israel, I watched that world of connection and interrelationship of dancing colors fade to black. I turned my head toward the Golan Heights to see once again that tired old world of opposition and division. A world where Palestinians hate Israelis and Israelis hate Palestinians. A world where liberals and conservatives protect themselves from one another. Where good work remains undone because people are too focused on our differences to recognize our shared dreams. But I remember those swirling colors, the festival of holy, where people who are forbidden to even touch one another on any average day dance together under a bright sun. I remember that we are choosing creatures. And I remember that Krishna chose Radha not because she was like him, but because she was unlike him. And that their very difference made them the inspiration of the ages. We can choose a world of connection, or we can choose a world of opposition. We can choose to see one another first for our differences, or we can choose to see one another first for our astounding similarities. That ancient Hindu story tells of a dark-skinned boy who fell in love with a light-skinned girl, of a bond that broke down barriers. As the images fled from my television screen, I turned my head to the rocky crevices of the Golan Heights. I fluffed my pillow, and I hoped. May we do the same.